Log.
December 1st, 2010. I don't know why I played that song. It's not particularly good for this show. Anyway, last week I started telling you about how older people usually have a lot of wisdom to share with you or me or anybody else. And as an example, I told you how that wise old man, Lord Mountbatten, wrecked a lot of lives because he told Prince Charles, his nephew, when Prince was still young, not to marry Camilla because she was a year and a half older than him. She was sexually experienced and she was a commoner. Remember that? Well, this week in the Toronto Star, they had more proof of a similar nature. Apparently, honor killing is becoming a big problem in India, especially northern India. Gautam Ghosh, my expert on Twitter, confirmed it for me. The Star, the Toronto Star, said in the northern states of Punjab, Haryana, and Uttar Pradesh, I guess you're getting near Taliban country there, about 1,000 honor killings take place every year. Lots of them are approved by the tribal councils that govern that territory. And I'm guessing that these parents there think they're so smart they can arrange a better marriage for their kids than the kids can themselves. And then they get really mad when they don't get their way. The Toronto Star told a story about a young couple. They saw each other in the street every day, and they fell in love. The problem was she was a higher caste than the guy. So her cousins told her, not even her mom and dad, the cousins said, if you marry him, we're going to kill both of you. But they got married anyway. Then they had to protect themselves. So they went to this group called the Love Commandos. The Love Commandos. They're like the Batmans and Robins of India who protect young couples from their own families. They go out and get these kids, and they bring them to safe houses, and they carry pepper spray so they can fight with the families. That's pretty wild, isn't it? And I was thinking on this show, we're like the Love Commandos of online recruiting, yes! People come here with their big ideas, and we say, listen, Papa, listen here, Mom! One and one is two. We'll grant you that, but everything else you say is just your opinion. You're not going to lord it over anybody here. Not when you're on this show. You got a big idea, you better prove it, or you're going to be pepper sprayed on Jerry Jerry. What show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show! Peaked a little early there. Sorry about that.
That was great. Bill Borman, are you there?
I'm with you, Animal.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Billy, though, first I got to take a moment to settle some scores from last week. Is that okay with you?
That's good.
Okay. Everybody's open? Yeah. Last week, I took a lot of topics from the Job Board Doctor, at Job Board Doctor, on Twitter. I found those on recruitingblogs.com, and I unfortunately said that I actually got it from the Job Search Coach. We got noise happening already here. I'm going to cut everybody off, okay? The Job Search Coach is a great guy, but I get excited sometimes and I make mistakes, and I didn't give credit where credit was due, okay? The second thing is SystemWorks.com. I told everybody that that's a good program to download. It costs money, but you can download a free sample, and it's going to help your computer run better. And the head girl went nuts. She said, I'm inviting people to come in and spy on your hard drive. That's not you come in, you download the stuff, and then you run it on your own computer. I don't know where she was coming from. People told me after, what's up with her? Well, I don't know. She can defend herself if she's here today. Anyway, who's making that noise already? Okay, Bill, are you ready? We're going to sing.
I'm ready. I'm ready for you.
Okay, it was Dave Manister's birthday this week.
Yeah,
and, we're
and Jenny DeVords. And Jenny DeVords.
Okay, well, we'll sing for both of them, right? But we're only going to sing the last two lines. We'll sing David and Jenny as the names, all right? Anybody
cool.
else who wants to join in, happy birthday. Anybody can
what
sing.
What do you mean we're only going to sing the last two lines?
Happy birthday, dear Dave and Jenny. Happy birthday.
We're not singing happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
No, no, we're not singing that first part.
Yeah, you
the
can't just jump
line.
Into the middle
yes,
of the happy birthday song.
Yes, we can. Yes, we
the
can.
The rest is implied.
I feel
right.
cheated,
whatever
animal.
That was, okay?
Based
everybody
on your monologue,
ready?
Can we just send Jerry to India?
Yeah.
Can you really start in the middle of anything?
Okay, yes, we can. Bill,
Michael, I don't
leader.
Know. I feel cheated.
We've got to do the whole song or I'm out.
Dave Bannister, do you want us to sing the whole song?
No, actually, I really, really don't.
Yes, he does.
Let's sing the whole song then. Let's do
Jerry,
the song.
Jerry, you're out. You don't have to sing, Jerry. Bill's going to sing. Let's get to it, Bill. One, two, three. Happy,
happy
birthday,
birthday
dear
David
and Jenny.
And everybody else. Happy birthday,
happy
to,
birthday
to you.
Shit show. Do you sing this a bit? You must sing this a bit slower in Canada. I don't know what that's all about. That was a bit.
Well,
strange.
We dragged it out. It was only two lines, Bill. Is that okay?
Yeah, we dragged it out. It's your house. You do what you like.
Congratulations, Kingfish Dave Manister. Yeah.
Jenny
Devon. Yay. Okay.
I, speaking on behalf of Jenny Devon and myself, I have to say that was the most unexpected gift of the year. Thank you.
Yeah, it wasn't too expensive either. Oh, let me see. Billy, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Hot topic up front, most influential recruiters. Oh, it's not on Twitter, but it's just online. It's John Sumser on his HR Examiner put together a list of the top 25 most influential recruiters, I guess. And I define influence, here's my definition, the ability to get people to think like you or do what you want them to. I think that's a good definition. Bill, you're number four on John Sumser's list. Jerry isn't there. People call Jerry after hearing him on this show and ask him for advice. He's not there. Maureen isn't there. She's the only telephone sourcer online, and she's very, very active. She's not there. How come, Bill? What's wrong?
Well, I think you've got to look at the algorithm, Adam. At the end of the day, you've got to look at how it's made up with all these lists. I think the first thing
is... Well,
don't
give me any crap!
The show just started!
You better come
Animal,
up with a good
Animal,
answer!
Animal, the first important thing to recognise, which I think is what everybody's shouting at, is there's only five practicing recruiters on that list anyway. So it's not...
I don't think there's even five. I don't even know some of them. Joshua Burson, does anybody know that guy?
Yes, I
Jerry?
Do.
Who,
never heard
who
of
are
him.
You? Dave Manister.
David Manister, I know him. Yes, he's
you know everybody, Dave.
Does he publish on ERE, Dave? Is that it?
He does not publish on ERE, but he's a researcher. He's an analyst. He's a consultant. He does a lot of work on the technology side.
Okay, but you know what? I'm active. Jerry's active. Has anybody else heard of this guy, Joshua Burson?
It says he's a writer.
Yeah, there's two things you're not doing to be active, which is not getting you on the list. Number one is is what you're tweeting about, so the keywords that are in your posts, and obviously radio isn't in the algorithm.
Hey, you know what?
Hey,
Peggy McKee is a fantastic recruiter. She was a fantastic guest on this show. But you know what? She's number one on that list. She writes a lot, but she writes for job hunters. I looked at your blog, Bill, before you came on the show. There's nothing there about recruiting. It's all for job hunters. You're number four. Jerry's not on the list. Something's wrong.
Here's something I find interesting about this.
Yeah.
Is there's a variety of lists that he has. There's top 25 HR digital influencers. There's top 25 most influential online recruiters. There's top 25 online influencers in talent management. Top 25 most influential online recruiters. top 25 online influencers digitally.
When I get a second to speak, I'll answer the question. I think there's two things you've got to look at in context, which I think is what is misleading about the list. Number one is it's not a list of recruiters. I think that's acknowledged. I'll be the first one to say that. But it's drawn up purely by what your content is. It's keyword driven. You understand? You know that.
In other words, it's garbage. You're saying it's garbage, Bill. Why don't you fess up and speak like a man?
Yeah, it is garbage.
Not like it is garbage.
It is garbage in terms of, number one, people aren't recruiters, and number two on the list is the word influence. That's what the real problem is. I'd agree with you. Traditional influence is exactly what you say. But if you look at how the Fast Company...
I read your crap
online.
About that.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
When I came up with my
Bill, new definition of influence.
Your definition of influence doesn't mean anything.
No. I think there's a big difference between online influence and influence. I think that's two totally different schools.
Bill, are you prepared to denounce your position on that list, on this show right now?
My position, I don't believe for 1 minute I'm the fourth most influential online recruiter. I just think for whatever reason I came up high in that algorithm on that list. On the top 100 recruiters on Twitter list, I didn't even feature. So it really depends what, at the end of the day, lists are lists, aren't they?
So we should really call it a list of people who waste time on the internet all day instead of making money?
No,
yeah,
I think... all the people there, they all deserve recognition. They're all leaders, but the list is just meaningless. Anyway, let's move on unless anybody has something else they want to say about it. Somebody want to say something else about that list?
No.
Where's Maureen? How come she didn't come here? I defended her. She wasn't on the list. She's the only person. She's the unique one of everybody. Okay. So, Bill, next topic, right? Bill, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Now, I've always been confused about what kind of recruiting you're always talking about. In the UK, it doesn't seem to be headhunting to me. It's not like you get an assignment from a company where they're looking for somebody who's got special experience and special skills, and you go out looking for people. It seems to me that you place an ad or something like that in the paper and build up a database of people, candidates, in one category, and then you start calling hiring managers in that category and sort of building a friendly relationship with them, and every now and again you call them to see if they're looking for someone, or you market one of your candidates to them. Is that what the recruiting, when you talk about recruiting, is that what you're talking about?
There's lots of different types of recruiting. So you actually get both in the UK. You've got those people who will work on behalf of certain customers and will go out and actively recruit. Headhunting we put into a totally separate sector. I guess it would be close to what you would term executive search. So that's similar to the stuff that Maureen does.
Well,
that's actively ringing.
Tell me, what's Bill? What's the difference between executive search and recruiting?
Size of your business card, mostly. To be honest, the different titles are misleading. But a headhunter is involved in either retained or active search, where they're going out to find the candidates for the clients. Recruiters will do one of two things. They will either look after a number of companies and mostly post through job boards. That's the way a lot of them work now. Or you have a candidate database who you represent that candidate, and you also have a number of client contacts that where you try and match the two. So I think that the big bit that I see as being different is we do in the UK a lot more of building databases of candidates, where you'll represent a smaller number of candidates and spend more time selling.
When you say you represent the candidates, what do you mean? You represent the candidates. What do you mean?
You're proactively looking for jobs rather than looking for people. So if I've got a candidate...
You're marketing candidates? Actively marketing candidates.
CSOs, candidates send out calls or specs.
Okay, now how do you pick the candidates? You just get the... You put a laundry list of jobs or something on the job boards? You get a bunch of people in response?
No, as
Jerry, what are you groaning about? If you got something better to ask him, go ahead.
No, OK, Carry on.
No, what is he doing? I've had Bill on the show a number of times. I don't understand what he does, okay?
Well, so when we're talking about candidates, what you do is just say you take a sales manager. You've got a sales manager candidate who registers with you, might be an old contact, might be someone you found online, and you will then take their detail and phone hiring companies who might be interested in a sales manager, and you spec them into the company that
okay,
way.
Okay, how do you pick the candidate that you're going to market?
The one that you think you're going to make some money out of.
How do you think the person's going to be one that you make some money out of?
Well, we all know that. It doesn't matter what type of...
No,
I want
you to tell me you're on the show.
Okay,
don't
okay.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter what type of recruiting you do. You'll see a resume which you think this guy is very placeable. People are going to like the look of him. And you sell them. Most recruiters sell in one particular sector. So they might do HR, they might do... technology.
Give us your marketing. Are you allowed to give us your marketing call here? You weren't in the past. Are you allowed to give us?
I've always been allowed to. I've never not been allowed to give you a marketing call. I don't know where you made that
thing. Just to clarify, is this stuff that you're doing yourself, or are you just describing how recruiting works in the UK?
I'm describing how recruiting works in the UK. This is stuff that I have done. This is stuff that I train. And it's things that I have done plenty of times in the last 27 years.
So give us that call.
Well, if I've got a candidate, first thing I do if I ring through to somebody, it, depending whether I know them or not, is just to say, look, reason for the call, I've got a candidate.
Imagine you don't know them and tell me every word you're going to say.
Okay, reason for the call is I've got a candidate.
My name's Bill Borman. How do you introduce yourself? I want to know. That's significant. Don't push my questions aside.
Right.
You answer.
How I introduce myself was, my name's Bill Bourne. I work for a company called, whatever the company is, and the reason for the call today is that I've got a candidate that I think may be of some interest to you. This is the reason why. And then I'll give two or three key reasons why I think he might be an interesting candidate.
Okay, you don't ask him if he's got time to talk to you right now. Is that right?
No, I don't. I don't, but they'll tell me pretty quickly if that happens.
Do you mention the fact that you're on John Sumser's list of 25 top recruiters at all in your presentation?
No, I don't. No,
okay.
That doesn't figure. And what I do
might,
now
might
to what I did
in.
As a recruiter is completely different role. I think we all know that. I've said quite openly, I'm not a recruiter anymore. I work with recruiting companies.
Okay, Bill. What's your website? Now that we're talking about you. What's your website? Give people a chance to find you.
It's the recruitingunblog.com.
You know, that's terrible. Recruiting Unblog. That's not a good way to have people find you. Recruiting Unblog. @ Bill Borman. BILLBOORMAN.
That's it.
Bill, is that your line? You know, is that someone in the kitchen, or is that your long-distance line from England making all that noise?
No, it's not me. I can hear the noise, but that's not me.
Hey, you know what? If you're the person making the noise, stop it, will you? Please, I'm begging you. Stop it. Okay, Bill. You don't give the person a chance to say. You don't say, do you have a minute for me right now? Why not?
No, I think as soon as you give people an opportunity to say no and shoot you down in your opening, they tend to do that.
Agree. You're setting yourself up.
Yeah.
You know
so
what?
I don't ask
hold
people.
On a second.
I also don't
people. You know, people also hate it when you call in with your canned message and you don't take a breath and they're forced to listen to you.
No. A good introduction is not going to last. More than a minute. You give the client a good reason for calling and you give them an opportunity to respond.
Can you make it up out of your mind? Maybe you can't, but you gave the example of a sales manager.
Yeah,
can you remember?
The reason for the call is I've just registered a sales manager who's working with one of your competitors. Just wanted to give you a call today, see how you might be able to use someone like that. What are you looking for at the moment in the sales arena?
Bill, I'm not looking for anybody.
Okay, no, not a problem. When you do recruit, what sort of people are of interest to you?
I haven't hired anybody for a long time.
Right, okay. How big's the company then?
You don't know, and you're calling me already?
No, the reason I'm calling you today is the candidate I've got is working with one of your competitors.
You didn't do any research? You don't know anything about my company?
I don't know lots about your company. What I do know is what sector you are. I really thought I'd give you the opportunity to say no on the candidate.
Well, I think you should do some more research before you start calling me up and offering to help me. Anybody else agree with me about that?
100%. And, Bill, I wonder, how many recruiters in the UK, because I find this all the time here, are marketing imaginary candidates? In other words, they don't really have a real candidate they're trying to get a job order out of.
Well, hardly any, really, because there's not a lot of point to that. I mean, that's, you know, I think that's
not a lot of point of it here, too, but it happens all the time.
Well, why would people do that?
What do they do when they say send them in?
Yeah, send them now.
This is the bit that I find a bit mysterious. Why would people do that? What you tend to get with lots of recruiters, which I've noticed quite a lot, is everybody says everybody else does this. I think there's a real thing that about the worst critics of recruiters and recruiting are recruiters.
If you read any of the blogs, you talk
about practice, and everybody talks about somebody else does this. And I think recruiters, we need to start thinking about our PR and what we're saying about our industry and all these public places.
Well, you know, interestingly working on the other side of the desk now, it's like every recruiter out there took the same training, because I get the same approaches, the same calls, the same it sounds like telemarketing after a while.
It is telemarketing.
It has nothing to do with the training. It has to do with the fact that it's a business. Everyone basically has the same thing to offer, which is themselves and their connections. And everyone sounds the same when they get on the phone. They say, yes, I have connections that are unmatched in this industry.
Yeah.
But everyone's saying the same thing. So you have to say all the other guys are saying this, but for me, it's true.
Yeah,
Can I just say something?
I think there's a couple of really important things you do when you're making that approach call. The first one is, you've got to have something relevant to say in the opening. And that was a fictitious opening, so perhaps not the best one. But you've got to have something relevant to say about the candidate which is right for that company. Because what you need is the person receiving the call to understand why you've called them. They're not going to necessarily say yes. They're not necessarily going to open up. But they understand why you've picked the phone up. They don't feel it's a random call. The practice that I think you're talking about is people ringing you with no actual real... No logical connection between why they phoned you, other than they've got 100 people to ring today. And that's, you know, that's a different practice. If you get that connection in early to say, this is the reason I'm calling you today, and it's relevant. So the first thing I talk to recruiters about is, if you're going to ring somebody up, you've got to think about, in your opening, why are you talking to them about something relevant? Why are you ringing them today?
Yeah, okay, Bill,
If you don't make that connection, they won't listen to you.
That goes back to Animal's... assertion that you should know something about the company that they're hiring.
Well, yeah, no, sure, you should know something about the company, but you don't have to know lots about the company. You don't have to spend hours. When you're ringing somebody where the call may go nowhere, you don't have to know lots about the company, but you have to be able to see a link between why you're talking to that company that day. Now, that can be the location, that can be who their competitors are, the sectors they're in, whatever it is. It's just thinking about why you're picking up the phone rather than just picking up the phone because you have to make 100 calls.
Cliff Mintz, thank you for visiting. He's one of our PhDs, our few PhDs who do call into this show.
It's been a long time since he's called.
How you doing, Cliff?
Slow. I'm good. Business is slow. I got nothing else to do, so I figured I'd waste an hour.
BioJobBlog. Is that the .com? Is that it?
That's BioJobBlog.com.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Cliff. Now, Bill, I got a question about that. How senior a person can you market? You were talking about a sales manager. So I assume you're calling a VP of sales to make the presentation.
Well, actually, you could market anybody. You know, how senior the position in the organization doesn't matter. It's how relevant that candidate is to that company.
Let's say you've got a director of manufacturing technology or a VP of manufacturing, from a fairly big company. Can you call who would you call and what would you say to that person?
You've got to go to the top of the chain, really. You've got to be talking to the CEO or somebody like that.
How do you get through to that person?
Well, actually, the more senior someone is in a company, the easier they are to reach is what I've found. I mean, you know, you've got to give a reason. You've got to look at who you're talking to. And to some extent, it's numbers. You've got to have enough people you're trying to get through to. But most people will talk to you about a candidate.
So if you're talking about a VP who's looking for $200,000 or $250,000, you can market that person just like you'd market a draftsman. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. The point is, though, you're probably going to have to look for a lot more opportunities. You have to make a lot more calls because there's less of those jobs about, or you're going to have to be very specific in the companies you're talking to. There's going to have to be a real reason for there to be some interest.
Anybody agree or disagree with that? I find that we've never talked about it here. I find it very interesting. Can you just telephone market with very, very senior people?
Sure.
Who said sure?
Janice.
Go ahead, Janice. Tell us an example.
An example is a chief information officer when you know one has recently become very ill.
CIO, at what level are we talking about? What kind of money? What size of company?
Don't know exactly what size of company, but...
Okay, I'm not talking about a two-bit company. I'm not talking about a CIO who really would be an IT manager at any other company. I'm talking
about senior people at big companies. I just don't know the million-dollar volume.
Okay, Jerry, you got an opinion? Got an opinion? Who's back with the music again? Who's with the music there?
Michael, it's Levy.
Okay, should have figured.
Go ahead. I'm sitting in one of your favorite Starbucks. No, of course you can. I've done this with a CTO when I know the current CTO has been on the blocks because I've been listening to the rumor mill. I went right to the CEO. Got the CTO right in.
Okay, a chief technology officer, what kind of money are we talking about? What size of company?
This was a 220-some-odd million-dollar company. The base was 250-ish or so.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But the issue is with what the bill said, it's relevancy. You need to keep your ear on the street. At the higher levels, you've got to listen to the street. You've got to listen to the analysts. And sometimes you have to take a chance.
Okay, the point is you can hustle somebody, and I mean hustle in a positive sense. Just get on the phone and knock on doors with a very high priced product as well as a junior model as well. That's
a
what you're telling me.
A need.
Okay. Birthday boy, do you have an opinion about that? I'd like to hear your opinion. Kingfish.
I don't.
You don't have an opinion?
No, I think it works for anyone. It's just that much harder when you go in at a top level because they have that many more demands on their time.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't agree with that.
Go ahead. Cliff Mitch.
I mean, I've actually helped find CEOs for companies, and if there's a need at the top, people are going to be willing to listen.
Yeah, well, no, agreeing with them. He is agreeing with you. So if you are placing a CEO, if you got a CEO, how do you market a CEO?
I call around the company, like what someone said.
Who do you call in the company? Who do you call in a company if you're marketing a CEO?
Well, usually I'm talking to venture capitalists or people that are, charged with searching for the new CEO.
Steve Levy, you wreck my show with that noise.
Well, look, I'm at your favorite place. I was on mute, but he's correct. You need to know your target. In his case, it's a venture capitalist or members of the board of directors.
Right.
Just know who you're going to talk to, and know that person and what you're talking to them about is relevant. Actually, the higher you go in an organisation, the easier it is to talk to people because they get a lot less calls, and people don't ring them because they're scared or they're sending email. It's just old-fashioned phone contact. Don't fear people because of position. People are people at the end of the day, and if you've got something which could be valuable to them, they're going to talk to you. What you've got to be able to do is if they're saying, what you've got to be able to do is quickly recognise when they're going, no, that's not for us, or that's not right for us for this reason, to finish the call fairly quickly. You can talk a little bit about the future, but don't keep banging on.
Mm-hmm.
Did everyone agree that senior executives get less calls?
I believe they do. Because they're screened. They only take the important ones, right?
Well, they receive less calls because they have screeners in front of them.
But if you'd had if you know there's a need and the CEO is whatever, you're going to be able to get through.
But you don't necessarily know when you're marketing someone, you don't know there's a need. That's the point. You're door knocking.
The point is, Animal, there's got to be relevance in the door knocking.
Right.
It's got to be somebody from the sector.
Your question was, do you call on a senior exec? That was the question.
My question was, do you market a senior exec? That was my That was the question, using the cold calling technique. I have one more question. If you're calling a venture capitalist, how do you locate those people? Cliff Mintz, how do you know who you're to call?
Well, this is back in the day when I was still actively recruiting. I mean, there were, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there were lots of companies looking for CEOs. And they were actually, if you're in the network and you know people in the financial world, as Bill was saying, the analysts, whoever was saying it, you know, you would tap into those guys and say, hey, who's looking for what? And then they would
give
you a name.
But if you wanted to find out, how do you tap into that network? How
Fact.
Do you become part of that network?
Do you
LinkedIn started as a venture capitalist exchange.
Right. I would go to VC meetings. I would go to networking, fundraising meetings, and get the cards of people. This is before, you know, social networking, where you had to actually, you know, do face to face stuff. You would then get into that network, get known in your local area. Luckily, I'm in the Princeton, New Jersey area, where there's a lot of in my sector, life sciences, lots of money and lots of groups looking to find money for startup companies or even mid-sized companies looking for tranches.
Okay, got to move on. Thank you very much.
Finding people is easier than ever. We've got
right.
Google.
Right.
Okay. Now, Bill, another question. Thank you, Cliff Mintz at biojobblog.com. At Exec Job Coach, that's Janice. Anybody who wants to find her online? D. Manister, I won't spell it. He's the birthday boy. Okay, Bill Borman, what would you do if you do a job for a client, a fairly small firm? Let's say it's a sales agency and distributor for overseas chemicals companies. So they're representing big companies, but, you know, maybe they've got only 20 or 30 people in the firm. So you do a fair bit of work working on their job order, but you don't find a person they want, or they cancel the order. You've done work. You haven't made any placements there, but you got to know a fair number of people in that sector. So you start calling around, and you pick up a similar job from another company. Here's my question. Would you recruit out of your original client company?
Personally, no.
Why not? You didn't make any money from them.
Yeah, but I worked with them. We had a relationship.
They're never going to give you a job again. They're a small company. You've never done business before. You don't know if they'll ever work with you again. Would you recruit from them under those, sir? Would that make a difference?
Not for me, no.
Anybody disagree?
No, because people move around too much, and you start making them mad. You never know where they're going to be.
Yeah, well, the idea is there, Bill. Is this it, that you were given a lot of information and confidence, and you can't exploit that?
That's my view. But at the end of the day, there's two different things that
happen.
Yeah,
you're not allowed to say at the end of the day.
I'm perfectly allowed to say. I work for myself. I don't have to answer.
No,
to
you're not.
Let me tell you from my point of view. I wouldn't recruit. I wouldn't directly hire from a company that I've worked with. However, I would take candidates from them if they came to me.
Right.
In the same way as I would if I'd placed at that company. I think you've got to differentiate that. There's a big difference between actively using the information you gain on a search and the contacts you get and somebody ringing you because they know you, they've built a relationship with you, saying, look, you've got this job on this job board, or you're working on this assignment, or I'm looking now, have you got anything? I would place that. I would
so
work on behalf
of that.
So hold on
a second. If you're
candidate.
Working with a hiring manager in a client
yeah.
company, and they've actually hired people from you, they've paid you, the hiring manager comes to you one day and said, Billy, I want to move. Would you work with them?
Yeah, I would.
Really? After the company's paid you $50,000, you'd take their hiring manager?
I'll work with candidates that approach me. But they
is
need
the,
to approach me. What I wouldn't do is actively hunt in an organization.
I heard that. Do you think the client company is going to be able to distinguish between those two events when they see the end result that you placed their guy with another company? Do you think they'll even care about distinguishing from it?
No,
I've never really had an issue. It's never been an issue in my time anyway. So.
Okay, you've done it.
I've done it, and it's happened. It's never been.
Who
it's
said
never
no?
come up as being an issue, but then people haven't talked about.
Who said
don't
no?
generally talk about where they get jobs from. They just get jobs and move on.
I said no. I just don't do it.
Yeah, that's fair. So you wouldn't work for if you're hiring for a company, you wouldn't. And one of your contacts said to you, I'm really looking to move on. You wouldn't represent them, Gary. You'd send them somewhere else, would you?
No. I'd probably refer them to somebody, though.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fine.
Gary, if you
look, I mean,
how many
companies are there in your marketplace? 50,000? How many of them are clients? 10?
I'd say, certainly speaking from a UK perspective, we tend to have much bigger client bases. We tend to represent a lot, or be working on behalf of a lot more clients in sectors than 5 or 6 or 9 or 10. What I've noticed in the States is you tend to work on a much smaller client base, but have a closer relationship with those clients. So, you know, that's maybe the position I'm coming from.
Okay,
you've got to do what's right for
your
market.
Speed it up. Look, here's the thing. If, you know, if you're recruiting, Jerry's wrong. 50,000 companies, Jerry's doing IT. So, you know, maybe every company needs his people. I doubt it. You don't have that. How many companies are there in any one niche? Not necessarily a lot of them. Mike Aestringer, got an opinion on that?
No, I don't. Go on.
Okay. I just wonder, if you start cutting yourself off too much, are you going to have anybody to recruit from?
Of course you are, man. You won't do business with 99% of the companies in your geographical area.
We're not talking.
Let's be real here.
You don't have to work geography. Let's say there's only 50 companies in that niche. That's a lot in some places.
Can I come back to an important point that you asked me about early on, which I think is relevant to this. As a recruiter in the UK, the way that I worked, and I'm just talking about me now, the way that I worked as a recruiter was I would try and work on a small candidate base and get on the phone and talk to as many people in that sector as I could. Other recruiters will work on a client base and work on a smaller number of clients and spend their time sourcing candidates. So it's really about your strategy or your approach to the market is going to affect that.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to come back to that later. Bill, one of the topics we had last week was Glassdoor.com. Do you use that?
I look at Glassdoor, and there's a couple of other things. There's a couple of other things in the UK in terms of reputation management.
Yeah, hold on. There's two issues. Let me just see. You're talking a little slow, Bill. I got to speed you up. You know, I got an audience. Okay. Now, Glassdoor. How often are you lucky enough to find information about the company you're looking for? What percentage of the time?
Because I'm not actively recruited, I'm not using it massively.
Well,
so I'm
okay,
not doing
you just say I don't know. Okay, say I don't know. But just for the people who don't know, Glassdoor is where, you know, candidates can put their salary information up there, or employees rather, the, you know, information about the company, what it's like to work there, what it's like to interview there, and so you get all the goods, good and bad. But you know what? I don't think there's that much information. Now, the reason I mention that again is because there was an article this week that got a lot of comments on recruitingblogs.com, and the recruiter said, she had a client, she got a candidate she knew was a slam dunk after 9/11. I don't know if anyone says that anymore, or rather Iraq, a slam dunk. She had a slam dunk candidate. He was hired. Before he could start, the hiring manager was let go. That's the general manager. So they put the candidate into his position, a different position than he was hired for. When he started, he found out that the client company that hired him, they didn't tell him everything. There was quality control problems. Products had been recalled. The FDA, the Federal Drug Administration in the States, had given
food.
The company warnings. Food and drug. Thank you. Anyway, so the candidate tried to solve the problems. They didn't like the way he was doing it because he was stirring the pot. 6 weeks later, they fired him. They called the recruiter and asked for the money back. She looked at her contract. It said, if the candidate's employment is terminated for any reason other than workforce reduction, a full refund is required. She asked everybody, the company lied. Should I give back the money? And there was a wide range of opinions. If nobody has an opinion, I'll tell you what the people on
I have an opinion. That's if that's in your terms,
Bill
that's
first,
what you have to
Bill
do.
Bill first.
That's it.
Bill's a guest.
If that's in your terms, that's what you have to do, because that's the contract that you agree.
Right. That's right. I agree with that.
Yeah, I've never signed a contract.
I don't understand what the question is. I mean,
should she be giving back the money?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Look,
man.
Look, the company lied to her. It came to light later on that the general manager was told not to talk about those problems.
Yeah, well, that's a moral issue, not a contract issue. If you've got a contract that says, we will give you the money back if this person leaves for whatever reason, then you have to give the money back. You could argue
they lied
about it.
They lied about the company. They lied about
the job they were hiring them for. Does it say in the terms, anywhere, if you lie about the company, we won't give you the money back? Because if it doesn't, then you don't. But you can't kind of renegotiate your contract because it doesn't suit you. That applies to all of recruiting.
I mean,
that company is cheating her.
But that's a moral argument. That's not a legal argument. At the end of the day, if you've agreed terms, however reluctantly you might do it, you abide by those terms.
Right, you have to.
Agree 100%.
Okay. Jerry said that his terms are different. I'll read them. But I tend to agree with the people who shouldn't. One guy, a guy named Ben McGrath, said, why ever sign a guarantee? He said, we're not in the retention business. Our job is done when the candidate starts work.
Who agreed with that?
I did. Cliff Mint.
Cliff Mint. So you never gave guarantees?
Well, it depended on the client. I obviously, like everybody else, I always tried to get that number down as low as possible because they always ask for a money-back guarantee. But if nobody asked for it, I didn't offer it.
Okay, now I'm gonna give you Jerry's.
The law, though, for recruiting agencies is you must maintain the same guarantee. I mean, at least in Indiana, I have to have a standard guarantee. I can't just change it per client.
You are regulated.
Highly.
Okay. Now, Jerry, just out of curiosity, I sent you my contract as the client. And that guarantee period was, or that guarantee terms were different than your standard contract. You couldn't sign my contract?
That's correct, and I don't. I have my standard guarantee that I have in all cases.
Okay, now my other question about this one, I'll start with Bill again. Is there any way she could have found out this stuff about the company in advance? Now, there were different opinions on recruiting blogs. One guy said, you know, you can find out chatter from employees and customers online. He said you should look on LinkedIn and see people who've worked there before and call them up and find out about the company and why they left. And I'm wondering, are you supposed to do a total reference check like that on every client?
I don't think that's the recruiter's job. I think if you're going to make a big move, like changing your job, if you're going to put your career on the line, I'd want to do a bit of research before I did that. And I'd want to talk to whoever I could. And that might just be somebody I know locally. That might be someone I'm connected to online. You know, there is an element of, you know, somebody taking a new... I personally wouldn't want to make a big step like changing my career, changing my job, one of the major things I'm going to do, without doing a bit of due diligence.
Well, the recruiter was losing between $10,000 and $20,000, let's say. I mean, that's significant as well, isn't it?
It's significant, and it's painful, you know, and recruiters, sometimes that comes down to recruiters to think about.
Okay.
A lot of clients, a lot of the time, the moral question is, do I really want to work with this client?
Don't overtalk.
One of the important things I think you've got to raise there is every so often, recruiters should be sacking clients.
Don't make me cut you, Bill, okay? Now, Jerry said, during the first month, I will refund 75% or apply it towards the replacement. In the second month, it's 50% applied towards the replacement. Third month, 25%. Guarantee is not valid if the candidate is terminated due to reasons outside of their professional or personal control, such as position eliminations, consolidations, downsizing, abrupt changes in responsibility. So if they changed his job like that, Jerry wouldn't have to pay back the fee.
No.
Right? Or give them any guarantee at all.
No,
right?
If that's in his contract, that's Jerry's call. But if it's in the contract, you abide by the contract.
Okay, does anybody have a question for Bill before I move on to the next one?
Could I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
So if this guy was hired into one position and then was pushed, I mean, he was hired for a certain position. He had every opportunity to say, I don't want to take the higher position, right?
How could he?
So, Well, he could have. He could have said, I wasn't hired to do this. And then
I don't know. It seemed a little late, Bill. Go ahead. Anyway, go ahead.
But I'm just saying that if he would have done that, and then he would have renegotiated. So what I'm trying to point out is that if, in fact, he fulfilled his obligation for that position and then was invited to do another position, if I
was a recruiter. Yeah, I don't think they invited him. Does this company sound like it? The guy resigns his job. He's going in. They say, oh, you're doing this job instead. Is he not in much of a negotiating position
well, I, you
at that
know,
time?
Well, I think that the recruiter may have a legal leg to stand on in terms of her legal obligation under her contract.
Okay, enough.
If she
moving on. Bill, what do you think of this candidate? Imagine you got a call for a food ingredients sales representative. Food ingredients, right? Client wants someone who's got a food science degree and experience in ingredient sales.
Yeah.
You come across a woman who's got 10 years selling automation, right? With me? Just say yes, Bill, if you can hear me. Yes,
I'm with you. Yes,
okay.
I'm with you.
So she, you know, after 10 years in automation, she didn't like the industry anymore. She wanted to go into food. This is her history. She started looking for sales jobs in the food industry, and one company said, look, you don't have any experience in my business yet. Take a job in QC, quality control, learn a little, then we'll move you into sales. So by the time you get to her, she's got 1 year experience in actual sales, ingredient sales. She's got a ton of good sales experience behind her. She doesn't have the education that they were looking for, but she sounds really good on the phone. Would you present that person to the client?
Absolutely.
I'd
pick the phone up. The opening would be very much, look, I've got a candidate who's a little bit off the wall, but this is why I think they might be quite good for you. Your call. And I'll leave it with them. At the end of the day, if they're paying me as a recruiter, they're paying me to come up to be an expert recruiter, to come up with suggestions, to talk about things that are different. That's why you use, you know, in the UK we call recruiters consultants because we do a bit of consulting.
Bill, it's Janice. Is that the way to start a conversation? I'd like to present somebody that might be a little bit off the wall because that's all
I'm
going to
do. Yeah, well, I would. I'm always quite open. But you've got to bear in mind, in this example, I already have a relationship with that client.
I'm not saying not to be open. I'm saying, is that the way you start, or should you say something more compelling and then, yes, that is.
No, that's the way I'd start. I'd be quite open and say, look, here's, you know, these are the reasons. I'll talk about negatives before positives. This is what
that surprises me, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think if you can counter your negatives, say, look, this is where
what you do is you present the positives, the highlights. So then when you present the negative or any kind of a shock factor, you've already got them high enough that doesn't bring them too far down. That's standard sales there.
Right.
So, well, I mean, that's
not saying you're not going to cover that in the call, but it's going to be later. You're going to say, I've got some good news, Mr. Client. I've got someone with 10 years, fantastic sales background, and a couple years ago dedicated herself to the food industry. You know, I mean, that's how I'm going to go about it. I'm not going to say, hey, I got somebody that kind of sucks, but do you mind if I tell you about them anyway?
No, I mean, I disagree with that. I think that Bill's approach makes a lot of sense if he's got a relationship, previous history with the hiring manager.
But
hey,
the first thing you say, everything's going to be framed around.
Cliff, you're wrong. Bill, you're wrong.
No,
from my point of view, I find it easier not to have negatives come out later. I think if you open with
them.
If you can add three positives to one negative, you're going to overcome it, and it's not going to come as a disappointment.
Right.
You're better off being open up front and saying this is the deal. That's what worked for me, Jerry. And
okay,
not
that's
to hide
cool.
It away
I mean, it's a basic disagreement in sales presentation, and I will certainly always start with reasons why versus reasons why not.
Even though it's all covered in
the same conversation.
But the other thing, too, is you're implying we're not being open. I don't think that's true. I think it's the order of events, not the lack of...
Bill, look at me. I got a follow-up question for you. Did you see the nice picture I put up of you, Bill?
Great pictures.
Okay.
Love that.
Great. But here's the thing. What if they said, Bill, she's only got 1 year's experience sales in my business. What would you say then?
I'll tell you why. Without having the cat, it's hard to say, but I'll tell you why I think they're worth talking to and why I think she's right. The key point is she's dedicated herself to moving into sales. She's got 10 years good sales experience. She's got transferable sales techniques. She's She's not what you've asked for, but
okay,
she's on
so
the
you,
money.
You would,
in my
you, would
opinion.
You would argue with the person a bit. You won't just
oh, yeah.
roll over
oh, yeah.
and say,
absolutely.
Hey, try. Okay.
That's why they're using me. I mean, at the end of the day, they're using a recruiter because they want some advice.
You know, Bill, there's certain words you're not supposed to use on recruiting animal show. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, you know what? I'm going to move on to it. I had another very long one about RPOs. I'd like to get to it, but I don't think we will. I'm going to move to Bradley Manning. Now, Bill, you read the news. You know all about all these documents, secret cables,
WikiLeaks,
diplomatic
yeah.
cables, were stolen from the United States. I think it's is it the Department of State or whatever, and they were distributed online by WikiLeaks. Turns
yeah.
out a 22-year-old soldier named Bradley Manning stole that stuff. And the way he did it, you know, I want to see if that means anything about Gen Y in general, because we heard so much about Gen Y. So what it means to do you have a comment, or do I have to tell you what I think?
You tell me what you think, then I'll tell you what
you
I
don't
think.
Have a comment right off the bat, though, eh? Okay.
No, off the bat, I think you've really got to look at one of the things that springs to mind is what would you have done with the guys who released the information about Nixon? Would you have stuck them in prison? I don't know.
You mean
Nixon?
Nixon is a different situation. Let's not go there. Okay, we're not going to talk about Watergate. I'll give you my opinions, I'll take yours into account. Okay, number one, Gen Y is supposed to be idealistic. Most young people are. This guy, the first thing he stole was a video of U.S. soldiers in a helicopter in, I think, Afghanistan, shooting civilians and then laughing about it, right? So, idealistic. And these guys are supposed to be IT savvy. He brought in a CD of Lady Gaga, and while he was listening to it, he copied the files onto the same CD, right? So, IT savvy. He fits the bill. But now, no people in the oppressive countries, they find ways to talk to diplomats from Canada and the United States and Europe. They find
mm-hmm.
free countries to help them. Now they can't because they're going to be afraid that WikiLeaks is going to put their names online. So this guy had bad judgment. That's typical
yeah.
of a younger person. So I would say this has nothing to do with Gen Y. Just everything about Gen Y just has to do with young people. Naive, idealistic, yeah, they like computers, so what? The guy could transfer files, and then he makes a bad call. That's what it means to me about Gen Y. It does prove that Gen Y is like a meaningless term. It's just a young, stupid guy.
There's an argument that says the first releases he did were valid. That there were things that were valid in the public domain. What he then did is got a bit carried away with it and started releasing things which start once you start putting people's lives in danger, you're in a different place. Then I think you know that's.
Yeah, okay.
That's a whole different
thing.
People are not entitled to know everything. But it is a moral
anybody, judgment. Okay, we're moving on. Anybody see CandidatesDirect.com? I got an ad from them. It says, in October, this is their one of the – send me an email. In October, LinkedIn started charging users to view your third-level contacts and fellow group members. This reduces your viewable network by as much as 90%. You know, do you want unlimited searches? Do you want the ability to talk directly via email and and not through a LinkedIn internal email system? You know, blah blah blah. So there's this CandidatesDirect.com. Does anybody have experience with it? I took a look at the site. I've never used it. I don't know anything about it. Bill, you first. Do you know anything about them?
Very little other than the name, and at the end of the day, it's not LinkedIn.
Oh, hey!
Man, yeah, thank you, Jerry. I just can't fight this guy, okay? Anybody else know anything about them? No. Okay, Bill, what about last week I talked a lot about targeted ads. Like LinkedIn is just one example. They've got LinkedIn jobs for you. You place a job on LinkedIn, and then it identifies automatically the potential candidates via keyword searches or what, I guess, you know, we've talked about the list that keywords bring up, but that's what it does, and it sends those jobs to them or puts them on
yeah.
their page or something. Do you think that's going to hurt us as recruiters?
The one I think will hurt us is the referral engine. I think that's the one where
the LinkedIn
there's certain
engine.
Things happening in LinkedIn. I'm convinced LinkedIn is going to reach a point where they're entirely geared towards corporate recruiters and not third party. because all the new products they're developing are for corporate recruiters, essentially, not for third party. So all
okay.
the things like Jobs Insider makes it easier for people to apply direct to organizations. All the referral engine, which I think will be a big
What's
one.
What's the Jobs Insider, Bill? What's the Jobs Insider?
Jobs
Listen
Insider works with LinkedIn or six job boards, or six different job boards like Monster and Dice and so on. And it means if you look at a specific job, it shows you what your connection is with the person who placed the job on LinkedIn, what your connections are in the LinkedIn organization, so you can see if you're connected with anyone in that company. And then it suggests if you're not interested in this job, you might want to forward it to these people. And it also
okay,
gives the opportunity
oh,
to apply
the,
for the job.
As,
yeah. And you
okay,
can either
the
apply
as the
for
LinkedIn.
The,
That's the same as the LinkedIn referral engine. It tells
no,
the people...
No, it's completely different. Referral engine's going to be quite different. What referral engine's going to be, I suspect it's going to be a paid-for product, but what it does is, if you within your company, if you're a hiring manager, it shows you all of the connections within your employees' connections that are suitable for that job. So if the search is accurate, it comes back and says... Jim Brown in engineering is connected with these people that meet this job. The point being, you then go to Jim and say, you know these people. Do you want to approach?
Okay. My impression was that Jim is the one who gets the message that these your company is
no,
looking
no,
for somebody like this.
No, no. The company gets the message. It's a company message that shows
okay.
you.
And so you think that's going to
what the heck are you even talking about?
You think it's going to hurt us, right?
Yeah, I think that's going to hurt us quite a lot.
Okay.
I think not just referral. I think all of the changes within LinkedIn. If I give you an idea, I went to a conference yesterday. I can only talk about the UK, but social recruiting conference, and there was eight fairly major organisations giving case studies where they've taken 1.2, 1.5, £2 million off agency spend over the last 12 months, working particularly within LinkedIn and developing.
That's what I'm talking about.
You know,
who
that
you?
Money's come from somewhere.
Who's that, Blake?
Nope.
Who is it? Okay, don't say. Go ahead.
What,
Bill, okay. Okay. Anyway, so TwitterFans.com, I think it's the last topic, Bill. I got a message on Twitter today from you. It said, these people are my Twitter fans. Like, well, what's the point of that, right? And then you have a link from TwitterFans.com. What's the point of that, Bill?
It was
How's
just
that
an application I was playing around with to see what it did. And then it gives you a list of people who are your fans, or you've had a certain number of conversations, and it sends it out. I actually don't think it has any purpose. It's just one of those apps that I was playing with.
Okay. And now you also published on your blog your Twitter toolbox. Is there, what's Twitter Sheep?
Twitter Sheep gives you the keywords. If I wanted to go to you, Animal, I put in your Twitter name and it tells me the keywords in the bios of your followers. So it'll tell me, that mostly, for instance, I'd expect to see Recruiter feature quite highly. So I would know then that you're somebody who is connected with quite a lot of recruiters.
And what's Tweet Me Me?
Tweet Me Me is a directory. It matches your bio with other bios and says these people might be interesting for you to follow.
And what's Tweet Spinner?
Tweet Spinner enables you to automate or time your tweets. So if you want, for instance, blog posts, if you want to tweet automated, I don't, but I know a lot of people that use Tweet Spinner, for instance, sending blog posts out at different times.
Mm-hmm.
If
is there anyone on this list that you would recommend most highly?
Things that well, certainly in the UK, I think Twello works
Me.
Really well. What the hashtag for looking at specific conversations, what's being said.
WTH hashtag.
Yeah, what the hashtag.
Uh-huh.
So, for instance, if we're using a hashtag for, if you go to the social recruiting hashtag, you can see, or any of the Twitter chats, let's say Job Hunt chat, you can get the transcript of any Job Hunt chat, you can see who the top contributors are, you can see, you can read the whole transcript about the conversation, see if there's anything interesting in there,
so they have to
and
go
also
to a site.
Pick out who you want
to
follow.
They go to what's the URL?
WTHashtag.com.
Do you have any parting words, Bill?
Partly worse, just it's been a pleasure talking to everyone again. I'm always around for shooting down.
Thank you, time for Jerry's After Show! Take it, Jerry! Forgot to say that at the beginning.
Hey, everybody. And
wow.
You're not allowed to be
let's
here.
Let's bring
Bill,
the energy level
go.
Down just a little bit.
Bill, you have to go. Bill, no guests allowed on the show. I'm going to hang up in a minute, too. Okay, there you go, Jerry.
All right, Animal. I'll take it from here. I appreciate you warming up my show for me.
Can we just move directly to the wrap-up
Thank
show?
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Jerry.
Let's bury the hatchet.
Well, okay. You know, he did say one thing I found interesting. He said the difference between a headhunter and a recruiter is the size of your business card. And I thought to myself, isn't that what you and I have been going back and forth about, the size of our business card?
I don't know about that. But you got a pretty good-sized card, do you?
My wife doesn't complain.
Okay.
Boom!
And one! Hey, you all still here? I see, Cannon, are you here?
Yes, sir.
A Stringer?
I am here.
Who else?
Yeah, I'm
Manister.
Here.
Manister.
You.
All right, who else?
Yeah, I'm here, Jerry.
Derek?
Yeah, I'm here.
Janice? Was Janice here? She bailed. Okay, who else did I miss there?
Don Kahn.
Hey, Don, how's it going?
Hey, all is well.
All right. Who else?
Cliff Mintz is still here.
All right, Cliff. Yeah, it's been a while since he's been around.
I know, I've been busy.
Are you familiar with the After Show and its format and the goal of said show, Cliff?
No.
Well, we'll start with you then.
Okay.
What we do is on a scale of 1 to 10, you need to rate the guest and then the host.
Oh, okay.
And you can pick a score for any reason you want. Some people might disagree with you, challenge your score, but in general, whatever you want to score. Whole numbers only, please.
Okay.
Our guest, Bill Borman, what do you think about him and his content, delivery, whatever you want to evaluate him on, Cliff?
I would give him a 9. I guess people don't agree with that.
No, that's fantastic for your first time. For your first time. And then the host...
Well, that's always a difficult one.
Yeah, now you're getting to it. You're getting to the real work here.
Actually, since I've been away for a while, I have to say, based on what I experienced previously as compared with today, honestly, I would have to say I'm going to give him a 9. I think
okay.
He was very good today.
So having not been on the show for quite a while, what did you see as a difference between now and back then?
Mainly that Animal was a lot more focused and he wasn't, you know, going off on personal tangents and stuff per se. And he actually had questions and things prepared that he needed to get through, which I thought was really good, actually.
All right. He
was able to control the... the lurkers and the audience a lot better than he has in the past.
So he's kind of developed a certain mastery of his domain then?
Yes, I'd say he's approaching the mastery of his domain.
All right.
That's what I think.
My suspicion is he's been the master of his domain for quite a while.
Yeah.
Blake.
Yes, sir.
Scores, man.
Bill Borman got a 9. Don't really have any good reason for it other than he's pretty conversant and doesn't get affected much. Animal got an 8. Don't really have much of a reason for that either. I didn't really like his phone connection at the very beginning. I thought it was a little raspy and very loud, hard to understand. He did a lot
I'm not
of yelling.
Sure why he needed to go with monologue take two this week. It's the same thing as last week. What's he even talking about?
No.
I think he's starting to lose a little bit of his focus on his monologue, but that's just me. It's just me. But I've been doing this for a while, and I spot stuff like that. Dave Manister, how about some scores there from New York?
I think I would give them both eights. I was pleasantly surprised with Bill. I thought he did a really good job at kind of keeping up with the crowd, and I think people kind of challenged him a few times, and I think he did pretty well. And I think that Michael did a really good job at keeping the show moving along, and it was just a fun one for me.
All right. Mike Astringer, scores, please.
Before I give scores, can I just ask a quick question?
Well, what's your question?
Were you sober for the show this week, Jerry?
I was sober last week.
Okay.
One drink doesn't knock me down, Mike.
It sure sounded like you were knocked down.
I was just having some fun. A little virtual theater, if you will. Somebody's got to spice this stuff up. I took it upon myself and had a good time with it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad that you did, Jerry. I'll give both the guest and Animal an 8. I think the guest is very knowledgeable, even though I don't always agree with him. And Animal was well prepared for today and kept the show moving forward.
All right.
And didn't cut people off like he often does, very much anyway.
How was your trip to Florida?
My trip to Florida was awesome. Thank you for asking.
Derek?
Yes?
Stolpa? Are you technically at work right now?
No.
Okay. All right. I won't ask a follow-up question on that one, then. What are your scores today, man?
I would have to say 9 and 9, which is kind of unusual, but I actually enjoyed the show, at least of what I could hear of it.
I'm having a hard time picturing this being one of the highest-rated shows of the quarter.
Well, I think it was. I think Bill was a very good guest. I think he had some interesting things to say, and I think Animal gave him a little push here and there, and I thought it was a good balanced show.
And that deserves 9s.
I wouldn't go a 10 because, no one can be perfect.
So this was near perfect in your opinion, then?
I think it was an enjoyable show, and I want to give it justice with a good score reflecting that.
Okay. All right.
Fair enough.
I'd like to see you put a little more thought to it next week. I'm going to let it ride this week, but Let me just see a little something that says you're not just an easy 9 across the board, because I've noticed that the last 3 out of 4 shows.
If you look back across my scores, I have given some significantly low scores in the past, or medium grade.
There was that one guy you gave a 2. Who was that? You guys know the show I'm talking about?
Oh, that wasn't Al.
It was a while back, though.
I remember the show. He was horrible.
Who was it?
It was a job seeker, wasn't it?
Wasn't it the resume bucket guy?
Don't you remember when we were in the show, like halfway into it?
Yeah, it was the resume bucket.
The resume bucket.
Is that the couch potato manically depressed job seeker?
Resume bucket. I remember that. Don, what are your scores today?
8 and 8. It was a great show.
I'm just maybe I missed the greatness.
It was great because it was on topic, it was relevant, it was current, and I like that we actually really start talking about the nits and nuts of recruiting and being better people.
Okay.
That's a good show for me.
Mm-hmm. I think Animal was fine. I'm going to give him a 7, and I'll give Borman a 7.
Hey, I want you to put a little more thought into that, Jerry.
I gave the lowest scores of the day.
I sure did. I don't know, man.
For someone who's complaining about everyone else's scores being too high, it doesn't sound like you were all that negative about it.
Listen, everyone, this is Jerry's show. Do not question him.
I think you need a third thing in there. You need a topic score. Like, I think that's what you're probably struggling with.
Because maybe, you know, Bill was okay, Animal was okay, but the show itself, I just...
Same old thing.
As a recruiter, there's nothing I'm going to now take to my desk, and I am in a state of constant listening, learning, and applying. That's my thing. I got nothing from this show. I'm not going to do anything new. That's what I'm looking for in my learning phase of my career. But I guess maybe you guys are looking for different stuff, and that's okay. We have a wide audience. Wide.
So, Jerry, you just gave them both sevens. Maybe mm-hmm. you guys are looking for something else. Sound like my mother.
Wow. Your mother has a beard?
My mother, who I love deeply.
Oh. Hey, I am looking for potential after-show guest hosts. If anybody's interested, nobody's really mentioned that they were interested, but if anybody's thinking about that, send me a note, shoot me a line, reach out to me. You can say reach out on the after-show. At the end of the day, I'm just looking for some people I can count on. So, anybody have anything they want to talk about?
Yeah. Jerry, can I have the floor for a minute?
Yeah, what? Go.
How about a half a minute? On a serious note, I've got some good friends of mine who may be using hashtags of Hire Friday coming up here, who have been impacted by the whole unemployment 99 thing, and very qualified individuals. So if we can all kind of... keep the Twitter feed alive and kind of help those folks and do some retweets on the resumes. I think it would be a nice thing to do given the holidays coming up. I, for one, know what it's like to try to manage a budget and look for a job, you know, day in, day out, hours a day, and do the best you can. And we need the market mm-hmm. to come around and help everybody. But a lot of these folks have kids and families and, you know, have things to do.
They're cutting unemployment off at the – if you've been, what, is it 99 weeks?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So how many people does that affect? I guess it's today, right?
Oh, it's going to be millions of people. And I know a lot of people that, you know, they're using unemployment to barely make their mortgage payments and you know, to keep a roof over their heads. You know, people that bought even just modest homes. Southeast Wisconsin is going to be severely impacted by that, as well as a lot of other places around the nation.
Yeah, I can't even picture myself in that situation.
You know, when you're used to bringing home over, you know, $1,000 a week, and it's cut down to about $300, and you lose your benefits on top of that and everything else, it's pretty devastating.
What kind of background do those guys have, though? I mean,
it's a lot of IT management, believe it or not. I mean, the hundreds of people I've, you know, been in contact with between Milwaukee and Chicago that sit around the tables every week. And that used LinkedIn and all the other tools. It's just amazing to see the number of people that have done so much in their career, but we just
Who's
need
speaking?
The jobs to come back around.
Derek Stolpa.
Okay. Derek, this is Don Kahn.
Hey.
Connect with me and I'll help them. I've been doing this since 2001, and I've been helping people with cancer that have lost health insurance and
mm-hmm.
were laid off and are trying to make ends meet. I don't have a boatload of money, but we need telecommuting jobs, and we need to bring this back now.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm traveling airports every week. I'm going back and forth between Milwaukee and LAX, and the number of people in my same position who are working day-to-day on contract gigs, luckily to have something at all, but... there's a lot of displacement between talent and jobs right now. A lot of companies aren't willing to go perm until we find out what's going on, A, with these tax situations, B, the economy as a whole. So we just need to keep our fingers crossed and say a prayer for our friends and hope some things turn around for their luck.
if you know of people hiring, put them in touch with me. 1,500 of the people that I used to work with were laid off last week, a couple weeks before Christmas, and I've got thousands others that are dealing with the same type of thing. We've got
Where was that, Don?
Sun, the organization formerly known as Sun. Oracle just let go of a bunch more Sun people last week.
Really?
I heard about that.
So I've got people in IT, sales, marketing, accounting, and professional services that are looking now big.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, just to see how it all sorts out, because you know, I don't know what I would do with no income. I have no idea.
Well, it's a pretty scary thing, Jerry. Let me tell you that. And for someone who hasn't been impacted, it's amazing when you sit back and you see how it happens. And I've seen a lot of people in the last couple months who didn't think it would happen to them. It happened to them, and now I can kind of tell them, not to saying, "Hey, I know what it's like," and offer some kind of comfort to them. But I'm dealing with people here that say, you know, it's unheard of. How can someone be out of work for 99 weeks? It's simple. It's the luck of the numbers and the location. Some places get it worse than others. Some people are secure in their jobs and some aren't.
Mm-hmm. What were you saying, Don?
It's very real. I was laid off from my job at Sun June 2009, but I was running dual careers since 2001, and the second career was my recruiting. That's where the reason I did it is because I help people in tough economies find jobs. I donated several $1 million worth of placements from 2001 until my job went away in June 2009. Now, this is my for-profit business, and I need to find more jobs to put people to work because the need is great and the benefits even greater.
Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. I definitely agree with that, and I'm seeing it go around. But, you know, hopefully there'll be a change that we can
telecommuting,
you know,
is the key.
Around and...
Telecommuting is the key. We need a telecommuting initiative within the U.S. like they're doing in Canada and other countries. There is no reason why rural areas could not hire more telecommuting people if companies would just realize that it's not so hard to do.
Oh, there's a ton of jobs. I don't even really have a need to be here, but that's what they request, and that's why I'm here. And I think it's just a draw on expenses, to be honest.
Hmm. Yeah. Yep. Well, anything else, anybody?
Now, on a brighter note, thanks for the show, Jerry.
No
Jerry,
problem.
If you need help, I'm happy to help. As long as this is Dawn, I have one more trip to go to Bangladesh to bring my husband home, and then I will be available predictably. Until
All
then,
right.
I'm not. Until then, I'm not available predictably anywhere. Between supporting a massive layoff from Sun Microsystems and supporting the recovery of a critically ill husband, I don't know. It's
oh my.
Yep.
Critically ill.
Oh, he was in a coma 2 months last year. He was going to die, and it's a miracle that he's living. So I'm trying to get him to the U.S. for treatment.
My. Wow.
So now you know why profit's important for me, too.
Wow.
It'll be okay, but it's a miracle that he's alive, and I'm just happy for every moment we've got.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, everybody,
all right, peace out.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Take it easy.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, keep your stick on the ice.